We're ready to go. We're getting there.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Where to start? We are pushing on in spite of the Wuhan coronavirus. And Don, it's very hard to know where to start, but let's start at the beginning. Where else? For a start, if you're going to look at me with that stupid mask, well, take the mask off while we're doing this.
Well, you've got them.
Take the mask off. I can not understand you at the best of times without that stupid mask over your face. Now,
well, as soon as you take the... you've got it hanging off your... Oh, jeez, you're an idiot.
I've got it hanging off my ear.
Off your ear. What is the point? I've raided Melbourne to try and find these bloody masks.
Don.
And I've got
Don,
the rubber gloves.
Don.
And you've got it hanging
Don,
off your ear.
Listen, man. The social distancing, you're at least 10 feet away from me.
Well, where's Michael?
I'll get onto that in a minute. Let's first things first. For a start, I'm over in Collingwood where I am... Every Tuesday.
What are you doing in Collingwood?
I'm over in Collingwood. I get a massage every Tuesday for 25 years. I've been getting a massage from a woman over there. No happy endings. Don't worry. Don't look at me like that. It's a proper clinical massage. And I spoke to you yesterday and you said, well, look, we've got a guest coming on in a minute, Dr. Peter Larkins, and he said, oh, it would be irresponsible if we came in and did it together. We'll do it on the phone. So you said, in that case, if we're doing it on the phone, we don't have to come in by 9 o'clock. So at 8 o'clock, the phone goes, I'm having a massage. And I thought, shit, something must have happened. The house has burnt down or so. And it's you. And this is your message. This is verbatim. Hey, where are you? It's 8 o'clock. And I said to the woman massaging me, Astrid, I said, can you believe this, Astrid? I said, I arranged to meet him at 9 o'clock as per usual because the guest, and he's now said, where are you? So I ring him back. So I ring you back, Don. And I said, Don, why did you send that message? He said, where are you? I said, where I said I'd be yesterday. I'm over getting a massage. You said we'd meet at 9 o'clock. And why are you ringing me at 8? Well, hurry up. Now, the virus has actually crept into your brain, Don. You're not thinking logically. That's first. And second, take that fucking mask off.
No, I'm...
Second, we go over for a coffee over to a friend just over here, and Don bounces in with the gloves. I'm passing this on. The man we can't mention, Rod Law. He says... Don walks in with the hermetically sealed fingers over these gloves and a mask. And he says to the bloke behind the jump, he says, I'll have my normal scrambled eggs. And the bloke said, Don, I cannot make you scrambled eggs because we're not allowed to serve food. You've only got to take it away. He said, well, I'll go and get my car and I'll bring it around and I'll eat it in the car. And the bloke said, no, look, am I making this up? So he said, it doesn't work like that, mate. I said, I can't serve you. He said, well, I've come up from Mornington and I need something to eat. The bloke said, Don, settle down, mate. He said, what we'll do is... So he took him out the back into his storeroom. He's sitting there amongst canned peaches and canned tomatoes and asparagus and fresh fruit and veg. And he's eating his scrambled eggs out the back amongst packing boxes. You are a tool, Donald. Robocop, you are a fucking imbecile.
Why did I get up this morning?
I'm going to take a photo of this. Just put it on our website. Take that mask off.
No,
I'm not going to sit here.
Listen, I've come all the way up here.
You look like foo.
I don't care.
I can see those beady eyes over the top of the mask.
I should have done a Michael Sheen and stayed away.
Well, hang on. We'll get on to Michael Sheen.
Don't you realise we're susceptible to it at our age? We're prime candidates. And who's been into this microphone anyway?
Don't touch the microphone.
Well, I've got rubber gloves on.
No, because it'll fall off its pedestal. So Mick Sheehan. So Mick's not with us. Mick's in his... He is hermetically sealed in a bubble down at his summer residence down at Portsea or Sorrento or whatever he calls it. And he said, I'm not coming up. I said, this is the conversation.
Did you give him a serve?
Well, because listen, Don. He's sitting down there and he says, I can hear his kids screaming in the background. I said,
I got that too.
I said,
do you think they dominate his life?
No, but it's not so much that. He said he's sealed away from us. You're 6-8 feet away. All he had to do was come in and sit another 8 feet away. And yet he's got a horde of kids screaming around him, sneezing on him, laughing. And I said, mate, come on up. He said, no. He said, no, we're in a very high risk category. I said, oh, yeah, are we? I said, well, Don doesn't do anything except chat to his horses. Have you been social distancing from your horses?
Actually.
But Don.
Now listen.
I'll come around and rip it off your face.
Don't you. Just sit there. Come on.
Go on.
Why isn't Rod... Have you got your gloves on, Rod?
Don. Good. Don, please, man. So, no, don't go look at your notes. I was asking you a question about your social distancing from your horses. So Mick Sheehan. So he says, oh, no, we're going to get him on the phone later. He says, oh, no, I can't come up. He said, because we're in the high-risk category. I said, well, have you been out of your house? He said, yes. I went down the supermarket. I said, how's your car going? He said, I got some petrol. I said, what else have you been doing? He said, I had to do a couple of bids and bips and bobs,
Very social Saturday night.
I said, you'd be far safer to be sitting here speaking to us who are... You're dressed up. I can't go on with this. So anyhow, Don, there's a whole lot of things going on, as you'd know, and I want to know why you and I, you sort of lukewarm with this, why are we the only people in the whole of Australia that said the AFL are absolutely... irresponsible and mad to start their competition? And here's the theory, Don. This is my theory. They started the competition because in order to garner some money from the broadcasting network, they had to start it or they weren't going to get their first instalment of money. So this was a money decision over health. And how it ever... You got the mask off. So I've got your attention, have you? So you're about to say something.
You have my attention all the time.
So this was a money grab from the AFL who put the health of the combatants and the support staff over a fiscal arrangement, and they've got their first payment until someone, the government, for God's sake, said, you cannot... Every country in the world has said that you must stop social gatherings, sporting and recreational and leisure activities. But no, the AFL started their season, thumbed their nose at everyone. It is the most disgraceful decision. The most disgraceful decision, unless I've got something wrong.
I think they've got a real problem image-wise to the AFL. They're our moral custodians, as well as what they did...
Custodian with a C.
Well, please correct me.
Obviously. Oh, you said custodians.
Did I?
It's as if they've been castrated. It's custodians.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, how could you mess that word up?
I'm sorry. I didn't have a phonetic department at school.
Don.
We didn't have a phonetic. So,
Don,
that's
nothing to do with phonetics, mate. That is custodian. Is C. Surely you've heard that word before.
Custodian? What did I say?
Custodians.
Oh, it's a slip of the tongue. Let's keep going.
Oh, okay. Well, in case... If you touch that microphone...
I've got rubber gloves.
It's not... I've told you it's going to fall off the table. It's nothing to do with the rubber gloves.
God, you're a control freak.
Well, you take no notice of anything I say. Unless I call you a buffoon and then you say, oh, I'm not a buffoon. Go on. So we've got a very good...
get back to the AFL.
Man from Chemist Warehouse. I can't mention his name. I won't mention his name. Man from Chemist Warehouse. Oh, no, I shouldn't have said that either. He says, tell Mick when he's here, but he's not here. He said that the ABC, you know, the great, you know, your ABC...
Well, who's I listen meant to RN.
...who's meant to give... an update on what's going on in the world, or Australia in particular, have not done any broadcasting on the coronavirus at all. They've had their old dreary programs on, haven't jumped in and given any new information about what's going on in the community. This is your ABC.
No, Donald. I listen to the RN, Radio National, on the way up, and that
absolutely
that
bloody chronic ABC.
I know, it's just that's on all the time.
That's an acronym, Don. Do you know what an acronym is? Do you know?
No, I don't, John. Please tell me.
Well, ABC is...
Take this mask off.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, look, honestly, if he wasn't serious, it'd be humorous, this. Take this mask off. He's had it draped over his ear holes and over his hooter and his mouth. I can't understand you at the best of times, let alone... So go on, what? So the ABC are not paying any, giving any service to the public about telling you what's going on, so our friend from Chemist Warehouse says.
No, they are. RN, Radio National, is part of the ABC.
Oh, well, I'm talking about the...
The commercial arm of the ABC?
No such thing as a commercial
arm. Well, I understand,
Donald,
but the more popular...
I'm talking about the visual broadcasting medium. Right. Channel 2, yes, Channel 2, the ABC. Go on. What did RN do?
Well, RN, all they're talking about is this coronavirus is starting really to get on, well, my irrits anyway.
Getting on your what?
Well, it's starting to irritate me, irrits.
What, chatting about the coronavirus?
Yes, and I think...
So what would you chat about? Let's go.
Well, I think the world still's got to go on, doesn't it? But everybody's
give us your topics that you've brought up today to regale us with.
Well, there's country football. I just read something again that the AFL's trying to do something. Did you read in the paper last week on football, the new positions on the ground?
Did you read that?
New positions on the ground. What about a tall defender? A lockdown defender? Do you know what a lockdown defender is?
You speaking to us?
Yes, I am.
Don,
a rebounding defender, a utility. We're talking football now.
There's no football going on, is
there? I realise, but this was in the paper last year. New positions.
Last year?
Last week, new positions on the field. Do you know any of these positions?
But this conversation, Don, is redundant because the football season is over for the year. So what's the point of discussing new positions?
Not new positions. This is the positions on the ground now. Well, we all know what a ruck is. What's an outside midfielder? That's somebody who's a little bit windy, isn't it? Doesn't like going and getting the hard ball.
Well, you've got to have some receivers.
An inside midfielder, a tagger.
You can't have everyone who are big, strong leviathans charging into the packs like you and headbutting everyone.
What about a goal-kicking midfielder?
Well, I think that's pretty self-explanatory, Don.
But do you have a specific task for a goal-kicking midfielder?
Look, this is just esoteric talk for a competition. Esoteric talk for a competition that is not even in progress at the minute. Now, okay, so I know I was just taking some advice from the man we were going to speak to, Dr. Peter Larkins.
Larkins can't talk to us now.
He can, but I think we've got to go to him now because he's Peter Larkins, isn't it?
Not like with an S.
With an S. So we're going to dial him up now. This is the magic of this could be a balls up this, but anyhow, Donald. So I want to get onto this in a minute. Do you know the overwhelming number of deaths from coronavirus are males? Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
And I'll tell you why they say it is. And this will be of interest to everyone, particularly you. What? What's happening? I'm just getting advice from what?
Yeah, we're ready to go.
He's there.
Peter.
Doc.
Sammy.
Well, thanks.
Nice to talk to you, but I can't see you, obviously.
No, and that's something I wanted to... Now, Doc, this just before we start, this is Donald. This is Dr. Peter Larkins, who is a ex-Australian...
Donald who? Is he a famous athlete?
Well, we used to watch in admiration, John and I, as you and Graham Crouch would do your
Graham
interval...
Crouch?
Graham Crouch.
Crouch?
Crouch. Remember Donnie, we trained at the athletic ground at Box Hill, you and I? We watched in admiration as these athletes pounded out interval training.
I've known Sam longer than you, Don, but I reckon I've known now, Sam for 40 years, and I've known you for 35 years.
Now, Doc, just for clarity's sake, Don has amazing capacity to talk over people when they're talking. So if we could do it one at a time, Don, when Peter stops talking, Don, you go ahead. Let's not have three people talking at once.
I'm glad there's a control freak in this organisation.
Well, Don, we're trying to get people to listen to this and not say, what the fuck is going on here? So, Don, I was introducing Dr. Peter Larkins, who is has a Bachelor of Science in medical degree, or whatever I'm saying then.
Exercise physiology.
No, he's a medical bachelor of... What are you, Doc? You're a...
I'm a medical
bachelor of medicine. That's what you've
had. I've got more degrees than you've got time to talk about. But I've got an exercise physiology degree, you're right, Don, as well as a medical degree.
Just a minute, Doc. So I'll just finish this. You are represented Australia in the 76 Olympics in...
Montreal.
Thank you, Don. Yes. And you've been a boundary rider and an aficionado at various stations and radio and television stations for the AFL, giving injury reports. And that's who you are. And we have you on because you said it was irresponsible to come in here today and sit opposite us, although we could social distance. I'm wondering, did you tell the AFL that it was irresponsible of them to ever start the competition this year?
Well, not surprisingly, Sam, good morning. They didn't ask me for my advice about the competition. They had a crisis cabinet that our good friend Eddie Maguire was part of, that the medical health officer of Australia was part of. My opinion before they played, Sam, that it was a high-risk environment for transmitting saliva and other excretions. So that was my advice in a public sense. But clearly, they've reconsidered their opinion that they made last week, and the competition is off.
So this
correctly
was,
off,
and I'm very glad you said that, Doc, because there is no other explanation that they've put expediency, money, and expediency over the advice of experts like you and all the other club presidents who just nodded in abeyance, that this was a disgrace to show Australia that they weren't taking it seriously and, in fact, the world.
I think history will judge it that way, exactly, Sam. I mean, the issue was, the advice they were given, there was a very low risk of transmission. Now, that was given 2 weeks ago in an environment when people hadn't appreciated just how aggressive and just how quickly this virus is spreading in the community. And the players are in the community. They're not just at their club. So the risk of a player contracting it, I think, is extraordinarily high if they weren't in isolation. And the risk of a player giving it to another player was 100% risk. So the right thing has been done, but unfortunately we took a week of people to wake up to that.
Well, but do you think, both of you, Peter and John, do you think that the AFL competition would have continued if they didn't close down the borders? Now, Western Australia closed down, Tasmania during the weekend, and South Australia, I think, as well. Now, would the competition have continued had those borders not been closed down? And travel, travel within Australia, internal travel was also closed down, so that put a bit...
No, look, it was clearly a factor, Don. I don't think it was the primary reason. I know it was given as a public reason. It was very convenient that happened because clearly it was going to stop travel from interstate teams if all the borders are shut, which they may well be by tomorrow, Don. But I think it would have shut down anyway. I think the perception of what was going on, Thursday night you only had to watch that game, and you guys played in an era when none of these issues were a factor, and no sort of hygiene to a great extent, and certainly in terms of player duty of care to another. But the amount of saliva, spitting on their hands before the centre bounce, spitting on your hands, then handling the ball and giving it to you, the amount of, person-to-person bodily fluid transmission on Thursday night was awful. So that would have caused outcry from all the public health experts. Forget the medical people that advised the AFL. It would have been the medical experts advising the country that would have shut it down anyway, Don.
So I am told one of the official reasons why they closed the competition down was because when everyone flaunted the social distancing protocol in Sydney by going to the Bondi Beach. That's when the federal government stepped in and said, we are closing down Bondi Beach and people aren't taking it seriously. And could I just mention this? I watch a lot of overseas news, and the only thing that they mentioned about Australia ever was, and I'm quoting because I wrote this down, Australia closed the famous Bondi Beach due to the flaunting of the youth of Australia to do with sport and recreation, not taking it seriously. And we are in the biggest game sport in Australia, and we have people, I just cannot understand it. This is the second major blunder the AFL have been involved in. The first was the Essendon doping scandal, and this is, you just wonder what is going on in the competition.
Oh, look, there's no doubt the Bondi Beach buffoons, the BBBs as I've termed them in my Twitter stuff at the moment, Sam, was a signature event in the public health awareness from Scott Morrison. And whether they were all Australians or whether there was a lot of international backpackers, because I'm told that, you know, Bondi Beach is full of visitors as much as it is of locals, but certainly that event from a public health message was a tipping point. Now, I don't think it caused the AFL to change its mind. I think there were other pressures on the AFL, one of which was the perception. Another one was the travel restrictions that were ever been placed. And the other thing, guys, I mean, look, we'll have 2,000 cases in Australia that we know about by the time we finish this interview, almost. That's what we know about. There's more we're not going to know about because people aren't getting tested or there's not enough testing going on. So the chances of an AFL player at some stage during the season, Sam, having exposure to a positive person or indeed having the virus, I think was extraordinarily high. And so that was going to shut the season at some stage anyway.
As a medical man, Doc, have you actually... For the layman, Don and I and everyone else who just think, gee, this is a crisis, have you been able to extrapolate where this is headed in the overall scheme of the world we live in? Because if someone doesn't come up with a antidote in reasonable time, the whole fabric of what we have known as the world will just completely disappear.
Well, I think the world will change forever, Sam. We won't disappear. There are much smarter people than me that are microbiologists and viral specialists that are working on to give an answer to what you said. So let's just look back first. The vaccine is normally given to try to prevent you getting the particular infection or to prevent you getting completely sick when you get it. There is no vaccine for coronavirus. It is being developed at warp speed. There's more research money being put into developing a vaccine at a speed now than we've had for any other medical cure in the history of the world, I reckon, for cancer, for motor neurone, for Neil Danaher. There's no money going as quickly as this into this. It'll take a minimum, Sam, of 9 to 12 months before the vaccine is available. In terms of a treatment or cure that you're asking about, there is no cure for a virus. There's treatment to try to help you get over it. And so that's where the medical resources are being totally, totally stressed overseas. We've seen Italy, we've seen China. You don't want to be there because their medical resources were not ready for it. We are ready for it in Melbourne and Victoria and in Australia. Now, whether we'll be swamped by it, we don't know. The end is a 6 to 12 months minimum away in terms of the viral peak, Sam. So we're all isolating ourselves so we don't spread it. Doesn't mean we still can't get it, but we won't get as sick if we keep ourselves as healthy as we can and we get treated quickly.
You is that wind on, or are you about to ask him a question?
Oh, my chain of thought was on well, one you haven't got and a then chain I was listening thought. Intently to what Peter was saying,
well,
and
I've lost speaking,
it.
Don.
I've lost my chain well, of course, thought because yeah, I was listening yeah. intently to what he was saying.
Well, while you're thinking, Don, I'll keep
exactly.
talking because I know
you'll
you
be able to hear him thinking.
Well, yeah, look, the issue about the impact on the world, we're already seeing that economically. I mean, Josh Frydenberg said last night it'll take Australia 5 to 10 years to recover from the billions and billions of economic impact this is going to have. And so in terms of the world, Sam, it'll change public hygiene perception for a long, long time. We'll have a vaccine eventually. Yes, we will. But it's not going to be helping the people over the next 12 months because it's not going to be available. And treatment for the virus is the same as the treatment for the cold and flu. You weather the storm. There's no magic treatment for a cold. You guys have known that forever. You know that when you get the flu, you go home and you fever up and you take your vitamin C and you take your fluid. Now, this is a much more aggressive virus than the flu. It's going to kill people over 70 at a huge, huge rate. Now, people over 80 are more at risk. That's why, you know, I'm isolating myself today, not because I need to protect you guys, seriously, but I also need to protect myself as a healthcare worker. I'm doing the absolute compulsory mixing people that I have. As much as I like you guys, it wasn't compulsory for me to risk being in a room with you guys today. So if we take those isolation measures, Sam, and take them seriously, like Boris Johnson's done today in England, where he shut down the frigging country, we haven't got that. But believe me, by this weekend, that will happen in Australia if people don't respect the role they have in not spreading this virus to each other.
Now, brace yourself, Doc, because Don's cognitive skills have kicked in and he's thought of what he was going to...
I can hear him, Sam.
He has thought of what he was going to tell you. So this, here he goes. This is him now.
Now, nearly 100 years ago, the Spanish flu went through the world. Now, what did they do to cure that, or did they just let it run its course, Peter?
They died.
I realise they died.
50 million of them.
I understand, but did they let it run its course? Was there an antidote for it, a cure, a vaccination?
What? No, there wasn't. It sort of ran its course, which is what you hope, you know, the plague does. It's what you hope that the Spanish flu, it's what the swine flu, as it was called a decade ago, that killed thousands and thousands of people did, because they were all viruses. You don't take penicillin or an antibiotic for these. And so ultimately the body tries to bring up resistance. Now, if you've got low resistance, clearly you're not going to get through this. So, you know, the Spanish flu and all those ones you talk about, Don, they killed all the vulnerable people who were heart disease, diabetes, people with poor access to medical care. Now, we've got better medical care 100 years later than what you're talking about, but at the same time, this virus is a new strain. It's not a virus that's been around before. It's appeared literally in 2019 out of the Wuhan wet market. And so suddenly we've got no treatment for it other than just weathering the storm, but we've got better medical care for you know, intravenous drips and respirators and oxygen for people with lung disease. So we're going to treat people better, but we're still going to it'll weather the storm, Don. It'll have to be go through it slowly.
If you could give a diagnosis from afar, Don has had chlamydia due to getting bird flu a couple of months ago. You think I'm joking? I'm not. I know koalas get chlamydia. It's a sexually transmitted disease.
With Don, just laughing at that thought, Don.
I know. Well, I don't think Don's been in contact with any koalas, although. I'm just wondering if he has had chlamydia or the traces of it in his person, would he be at a accelerated risk than someone like myself who's not had chlamydia as yet, unless he passes someone it on to me?
He's had a pure life like you've had, Sam. Well, look, the answer is probably no worse risk. I mean, the older you are, the more viruses and colds you've been exposed to over your lifetime. So your immune system, as it's called, has worked very hard. And, you know, there's only so much that your immune system can take. So elderly people, and with why the younger kids are better protected, if I can just bring that topic in right now, because they haven't had a lifetime of using up their immune system on coughs and colds yet, so they're more turbocharged to deal with it. People in your age group and Don's age group, and dare I say nearly my age group, guys, we've had a lot of stress on our immune system, whether it's chlamydia, whether it's coughs and colds, whether it's shingles, you name it.
Hang on, Pants.
Hang on.
You are...
Now, Don,
he's right up with us. He's trying to say he's younger than what we are.
Why are you calling him Pants?
Well, I don't know why I'm calling you Pants. All your athletics mates did. Why do they call you Pants?
Now, listen, I came on here not to be abused by your...
I'm not being abused. I'm inquiring.
Quite right, Don.
I'm inquiring, Pants.
Can I tell you who gave me that name?
Who?
Raylene Boyle, Don.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I think she liked the colour of the shorts I used to compete in.
I think you're a chaser,
let's get
Peter.
Back on the serious topics, Don.
Don, you're trivialising. Yeah. Don't worry about whether he's called Pants or what colour of shorts he had Raylene Boyle.
So the issue is here of your previous exposure, Don, is how many people do we know that smoke in Italy and Greece, for example? So you think about all the deaths over there, their lung capacity and their respiratory capacity. So if we've got someone here that's got lung disease, who's been treated with chemotherapy, who's got heart disease, they're the high-risk group. And that tends to be people in the, you know, I'll call them 70 plus, it might be 60 plus. So that's why we're talking about elderly people being at risk and keeping people away. Like Mike Sheehan today, for example.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
There, I believe.
No,
elderly Mike, who you know, is, let's say he's not the fittest person on the planet.
He's the unfittest person. Who's his doctor? Do you know who his doctor is?
I'm already taking enough abuse. I'm not going to put my hand up as being... I'm not his GP doctor, but I do help Mike with all his athletic and exercise and sports medicine.
You'd be worked overtime from Michael. He'd be there on your doorstep every day.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, my point to the public who are listening is the reason we're being protective of our parents and our grandparents and other people that are our neighbours is because they are extremely vulnerable to not being able to have the resistance brought. And we don't want these people in hospital. So back on a quick serious note, we've got 300 intensive care beds in Victoria, guys, 300. We're going to need thousands of people in hospital with intensive care treatment. So all of places like Epworth and Cabrini Hospital are on standby to be an assistance to the public system. So we're taking it very seriously in Victoria and Australia so that we cannot have the death rate that the overseas countries have had.
Now, they say that the 70% of the deaths in Italy are male. And the reason they are giving, I just heard this is what the synopsis was, that the reason that primarily more men are dying than women is because women have two X chromosomes as opposed to a man having one, and their immune system is better because they've had to raise children and childbirth. This is the scenario why they're saying women are not getting it as much as men. I know these are conspiracy theories, but that sounds reasonable for someone who has no idea about medical facts.
I think the theories outweigh the facts about this virus, Sam. You think of, you know, every day we hear something we hadn't heard before. People are learning on the job. There's no corona expert in the world. I know we're trotting them out on the BBC and on television because they're virus experts, but these guys are learning by the minute as well. So the theory about why men and women, well, I would say to you, Sam, more men than women smoke in those countries.
Yes.
And so their lung capacity is actually worse because if they're 50 or 60 or 70 years of age, they've probably been smoking seriously for 40 years or 50 years.
No, good point.
Maybe some of the teenagers and the people in their 20s are not smoking as much, but you and I both know that that's still a lot more smoking going on over there than over here. So there's one. Whether it's an X chromosome that gives it, I can't answer that. Yeah. There are more males, but maybe males are mixing more in the workplace. They're out, they've been out and about more. They've been in the bars more. I mean, who knows what the reason is, Sam? People are guessing that.
Now, we're speaking to Dr. Peter Larkins, Don, and just so... in case you've got in late and you don't know who we're speaking to.
Are we doing this live?
We're doing this live, Donald. So you said before that this is a certainly 9 months or a year before this any improvement or this we get on top of this, I think you said. Just before we get on to other things that we'd like to speak to you about, there's only so often long we can speak about the coronavirus, I suppose. Just what is going to happen to the planet, to this country, to the AFL, to anything, if we're all on lockdown and standby and on hold for 9 months? That's my point about it's best to get on with life and hope that you don't die from it rather than actually everyone completely disappearing.
Yes, and the 9 to 12 month time frame was the vaccine development, to clarify what I said before.
Yes.
In terms of the lifespan of this particular pandemic, that Scott Morrison has put in place changes within the community for a 6 month minimum period because that's his best guess based on what he's been told by Brendan Murphy, our chief medical officer and health officer in the nation. So best guesses are 6 months of a pandemic, but 9 to 12 months for the vaccine was my point. The impact is going to be years because we're just seeing commercially, I mean, you and I have looked on, Sam, we've all got friends that have got businesses, have got hotels, have got bars. They've stood off workers. A lot of these workers won't have their jobs for 6 months. So where the world is going to go, let's just look at Australia initially, is we're going to have an incredible period of time. And if lockdown comes in like it's happened in England today, lockdown means we're totally stuck at home, Sam. The only compulsory people to go out will be healthcare workers, nurses and delivery food people.
And us.
You know, that, that, Well, if you're an essential person, Don.
No, Scott Morrison said the podcast must go on because we're delivering a service to the community. Yeah.
Well, delivering information to the community will be, but don't you think people are getting very anxious in the community, aren't being saturated by changes and things like that? I know the information spread that we're putting out is critical, but, you know, I don't want lockdown. Lockdown will be because people are being naughty people and doing the Bondi Beach buffoon behaviour. So the thing is, there are more people out there not diagnosed than diagnosed. I said that to you earlier. We're talking about 10% of people in Australia having the virus during this pandemic. Now, can you do the numbers? Let's call it
2.5 million.
Well, at least. And so of those, 80% will just get a bad cold or flu-like symptoms and won't need hospital. But of the 20% that are vulnerable or sick, you do 20% of 2.5 million, that have to, 20% of those people have to be in hospital, Sam. Have to be in a hospital treated in intensive care. So if we do not, you know, take the notice to halt the spread of this, that's the impact it's going to have on the healthcare system and health resources. That's why we're asking people to behave. We don't want those numbers.
Now, Peter, are the government or authorities doing enough right at this stage? Because they seem to be very wishy-washy, following the leader, Australia. They're following New Zealand, for example. We seem to be a step behind. Are you happy with what they're doing?
Mostly, Don.
Don't sit on the fence, Peter.
No, I'm about to finish my answer. I'd like to see...
Let him answer before you decide if he's sitting
on the
fence.
I'd certainly like to see all interstate travel suspended. So I think, you know, people saying don't do it unless it's compulsory, I'd like to suspend it. There have to be extraordinary reasons to not allow more people to come into Victoria or us to go elsewhere. Like South Australia has already done it, right? And other states and Western Australia. You and I can't go there today. So I think that part of it. But in terms of, is the government done it? I think they've, without being completely, and I don't want to use a politically incorrect word here, I know you guys...
Be politically incorrect.
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of being a state of, you know, going back to the, you know, the 1920s and 30s when you're putting in a state of complete control and dictatorship of people, we're asking people to be responsible. I know you're a wordsmith, Sam, but thank you. I'm looking for the public to do the right thing to control it. Forget sport. This is not a sport conversation. This is a general public conversation now. We're looking for the public to do the right thing. Otherwise, the government is ready for step two or phase two that Dan Andrews spoke about yesterday that you guys would have heard. Phase two is we'll be told. You're not allowed to go out. You'd be arrested if you go out into the street. I mean, that state has never existed in this country. We've never been that draconian. But I think that's where we're heading if people don't do it. Is the government doing enough? The government is giving people the opportunity to do the right thing themselves. And if they don't do the right thing themselves, I think the government will flick the next switch.
So have a listen to this. A friend of mine was booked to go on the GAN from Adelaide to Darwin and flew over from Melbourne, got on a flight with their family, had booked it for a year, landed in Adelaide, got some transport out, was sitting in the carriage on the GAN and just wondering when the train was going to pull out. And an announcement came over the platform. They said, because they've closed the borders, unless the train can get into Darwin and back by, well, it turned out Tuesday, but doesn't matter what day, it was physically impossible for the train to get up there and back. So they were told to get off the train. They drove back out to the airport in Adelaide and flew home.
That story was repeated.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Well, that story was repeated in other circumstances of even airport travel over the last 24 hours where people were told, okay, if you get on a flight at Tullamarine and you fly for here or there, they're about to close their borders. You will not be able to come back. So people have just turned around and gone home.
Can come in from overseas, Peter. This is what I find very, very frustrating. Now, listen to this. So last Wednesday, for example, two people came in from Europe, flew through Dubai, landed at Sydney International Airport. Now, they've come from Europe, yet they could walk through the terminal at Sydney. There was no examination, go through the domestic terminal, fly out to the regional area where they live.
Yeah.
Their parents were responsible, left a car at the regional airport. Those two people are now in isolation in the country, yet the authorities are not taking taking a firm hand here and set an example. It's coming back to us. They've got to isolate themselves.
Well, Don, you're right. I mean, that's where I said the responsibility is with people, but there's also some things being allowed. So if I was in the hot seat and being and making the decisions today, I would stop that international transport completely. Not far from where you guys are and from where I live. Station Pier, Sam, you know it well, Don, you know it well. I was down there on Saturday doing my exercise walk in isolation away from else, and there were two cruise ships parking. One's out in the middle of the bay this morning, Pete, as I
came
through. Been there for a fortnight.
The one in the middle of the bay.
It's been anchored there.
Yeah, but the Golden Princess and the other one, Sam, I watched them berth it in. I was thinking of you because you've got your master ship's license or whatever it's called for your CC rider.
Yes,
but,
absolutely.
You know, that thing came in. There were 5,000 people in total allowed to – so people that lived in Melbourne got off and they were walking past me with their suitcases and things because they were going home. But other people who wanted to fly into state or international got off the flight and headed off to Avalon and Tullamarine and everything like that. I thought that was just ridiculous that Melbourne allowed people to do that as recently as 4 days ago, Sam.
It is just extraordinary.
I think we lack real leadership in Australia.
No, we don't.
In Australia, we do. I think
who would do better?
I think they should. Oh, I'll give you one person, Jacinda Ardern.
Now, she's in New Zealand.
Oh, I know, but if we had her over here, I think things would be a little bit different.
Let's get Donald Trump over. He'll smarten things up. Donald.
I think in the coming week, guys, we'll see international in-and-out travel restricted, in-travel restricted or stopped, I should say. I think we'll see travel from between any states of any for any reason, apart from something that's extraordinarily critical, like the politicians themselves maybe having to do something, then that'll stop. And we may be in a situation where, you know, we do what Boris Johnson did, because I think that is surely, well, definitely, not surely, it's definitely a way to stop people mixing in public.
Now, Doc, I'm going to ask you some questions other than about coronavirus. I just wanted your opinion on actually how do you close the borders? I presume you can get in a car and drive across Albury and into New South. How do you close the borders?
Sam, I'm sorry. You'd have to ask a policeman. You're right. Donald Trump can't stop him getting from Mexico to the US, can he? You're right.
But you can't. You can get in a car and drive up to Dimboola or wherever the border is, or at where Bob Hawke was born, wherever that was.
You can stop the Hume Highway. You got the main thoroughfares. You can say it's a criminal offence if you do it and get caught. But people can get a four-wheel drive and drive through one of Don's rural properties to get into New South Wales, probably, Sam.
But my simpler question is, if you're driving up the Hume Highway and you get to, well, Border Town or whatever it's called.
No, that's the other way.
Well, it doesn't matter. You get to the... You get to the theoretical boundary of where the states are. Are you saying that there's a roadblock there and they say you can't?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. The same way when we wanted to go into East Germany when I pretended to be an athlete and we wanted to compete in East Germany, we had to go through a roadblock to get into East Germany as athletes, for example.
But that was because there was a communist and capitalist state.
Yeah, but what's the difference? It's a border.
Same principle. You're screening people across a land border, not an air border, is what I was making the point, Sam. It can be done. You have a roadblock at Albury or Wodonga or wherever the technical border exactly is, and you're not allowed through. You're not allowed through to South Australia. This is a draconian word again, measures, but if it means we're stopping people from going into other communities and spreading it, Hobart wants to do, they're an island, they want it, or Tasmania, I should say. New Zealand has done it, where they said, don't bring your germs to us, we're not letting you come here. It's the only way to stop it, because they've got enough there already.
Now, Doc, moving on, the time we've got you here. Had the competition continued, the AFL, and it will at some stage, what was your opinion on the bevy of cases and people scrambling to get onto the CTE bandwagon, which I call it? You might say that's not taking it seriously. I take it seriously, but I reckon people like any avenue of society have optimized their plight. They've exploited it.
Yeah.
Do you not agree with that?
I just wasn't quite sure what side of the equation you're sitting on with that comment, Sam. I mean, CTE is incredibly important to get sorted out because of it's being blamed for a lot of behaviour of ex-athletes in society, and they're saying, oh, it's CTE. These are the ones that are still alive.
Yes.
Because so we're still trying to develop a PET scan, not an MRI, a PET scan that shows CTE in you or me before we have a post-mortem brain examination. So the link between concussion and head injury and CTE is presumably very strong, but it's not irrefutably there at the present time, Sam. And the problem is Alzheimer's and dementia's behaviour is the number three cause of death in Australia in the community, not for people that didn't play sport. So we know that these symptoms that are being attributed to CTE, like memory loss and confusion and anger and depression and anxiety, are also very, very common. So we're trying to make sure that we know that CTE is a separate condition to those caused by head injury. And that's research going on. And one of the trips that I've cancelled, Don and Sam, ironically, was a trip to Europe for the World Consensus Meeting on Concussion and CTE. It's now not being held, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been good to come on when I got back from that trip, guys, because at the moment there's research being done to look at it. Polly Farmer, who you know well, yes, and I saw play because I'm old enough to watch him play at the footy ground. And Don, you would have, did you play against him, Don? Probably not, yeah. But you know, not in 63, you wouldn't have. But you know, the issue.
Well, I did in 67 and 1971.
No, you didn't.
And the reason I mentioned Polly Farmer,
oh, and it wasn't a state game.
Yes. The reason I mentioned Polly Farmer for listeners' sake is because they are he's the first ever AFL player to definitely be given that diagnosis after he died, and he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia many years ago, Sam, as you know.
Peter, can you draw breath for a moment?
Well, yeah, he's only asked,
because I would have liked to have talked about your athletic career because I found that very interesting.
You haven't got enough time, Don.
I understand that, being a seven-time Australian champion. But one other thing, while we're talking about sports medicine, the women, I've watched a couple of games and I've only watched grabs of it, but are the women made to play this contact sport? Now, as boys growing up, we kicked the football, we did all this type of thing, yet these ladies seem to get a lot of injuries, knee injuries, for example. Are they built
anatomical differences,
well,
Don?
I don't know. It's a conditioning of the muscles. I think it's more a conditioning of the muscles.
Yeah, Don, it is a big topic. I do have to go because I genuinely have to get to some important medical work. And I did say that this to Dr. Sheehan when we discussed coming in to see you guys. I'd love to come in again because there's probably eight or nine factors, many of which can't be changed. Part of it is the engineering and design of the shape of the lower leg in the woman, not just the knee, but the whole lower leg, Don. Muscle strength is always going to be 10 or 15% less than blokes, no matter what you do, no matter how much gym work you do. Pre-season conditioning and being familiar with the game is, again, a negative for the girls because they haven't grown up playing the sport. So if you put them all together, we're getting 10 to 12 times the incidence of significant ACL injuries.
Now, Doc,
in compared to the men.
Give us 30 seconds and then we'll let you go. What is it like? Thanks. None of us will ever experience this or have. What is it like to stand on the blocks in an Olympic final or an Olympic event in 1976 representing your country with everyone else from all over the world? What is it like to stand on the blocks ready to represent your country in the Olympics?
It makes you scared shitless, Sam, to be honest. I mean, it's incredibly... I mean, the impact at the time you don't appreciate. It's a lot of things in your career. I mean, you understand the work you've done to get there, and obviously, other people get as much of a thrill out of it like my parents did down at Geelong, Sam. So it is historic. If you look back at it and you say, "Gee, I wish I'd taken it in more or enjoyed it more." So you, clearly, you know, you don't underestimate the fact that how privileged you were to do that.
You've gone over that 30 seconds, Peter.
Shut up,
yeah,
Don.
Sorry, but no, yeah. The other biggest crowd I ever competed in front of, Don, and It wasn't at the Olympic Games. The biggest crowd I ever ran in front of, boys, was 1977 at the MCG at the Centenary Test, England versus Australia, and there were 87,000 people
at
the MCG.
What were you doing running? He's about to tell you.
Quickly, in 10 seconds, Don, John Walker was the world champion mile runner.
New Zealand.
And I was considered to be a half good miler as well as a steeplechaser. We put on at the team.
A half good miler? Oh.
We did a mile. We did a mile race on the grass on the MCG.
I think you're pushing your barrow here. You're a pretty slow steeplechaser.
Don, will you shut the fuck? He's telling you. Well, he ran against John Walker, I think the New Zealand champion. He's telling you what he was doing and why.
They put on a whatever it's called, a display event. At the MCG, 10 of us ran a mile on the MCG. That's the point of my story.
Thanks, Pants.
Righto, listen, no, thank you, Don.
Hey, Doc.
Let's catch up another time.
Thanks very much for sharing all that with us, and keep safe.
Thank you. You too. Keep your distance. Don't go to any nursing homes.
Oh, Pants.
Don, for God's sake. I was interested to know that he was running against John Walker, and you had these inane interjections. Why? You're not a half miler.
He was a steeplechaser.
Well, he said, if you're a steeplechaser, you don't have to run.
John Walker would have been so far in front of him.
Well, we were trying to gather if he was
I think Pants was pushing his own barrow. He was thinking he was as quick as John Walker.
He was saying that the biggest crowd he ran in front of, as opposed to the Montreal Olympics, was 87,000 at the MCG, Donald. So, fair dinkum. Now, Don, I was interested about the... What's wrong? What you've gotten to...
The headphones have gone.
Well, you can hear me, can't you? I'm going to get onto the chromosomes. Two chromosomes. Women have two X chromosomes and they are sexually oriented. So this is possibly why, the second X chromosome is about sex. And we were speaking about sex last week, that you and Mick had never been in love. And I've got a feeling you've got onto the only two women who've got two chromosomes, you idiot. So wasn't that interesting Doc Larkins?
Really, it's riveting.
You weren't interested in any of that?
I would have liked to have talked about his athletics. I'm more interested in the athletics.
Well, Don, at any stage of the interview, like I said, Peter, I'd like to get on.
I couldn't get a word in. He doesn't draw breath.
You and he
would be a great combination.
Every week you say that, Don, and you sit there with that vacant look. And the minute I said, have you got a question, you went blank and you said, I'm concentrating.
I had my finger up ready to come in, and you'd come in over the top.
You had your finger up. I said, but your brain had gone into neutral. You said, I was so interested in the answer, I've lost my train of thought. I mean, the train has pulled out it's gone to 8 different stations since your train of thought kicked in.
Talking about the train.
All right, go on. Quickly talk about it now.
Just talking about the train. You wouldn't believe this.
Fucking hell. Go on.
It's about the bus. We're getting listeners right around the world. I got into
our
website.
What's this got to do with the train?
Well, a lady in Winnipeg wants to know what the situation is.
What are you laughing at, stupid man?
A lady in Winnipeg listened to our podcast, which is in Canada.
In the train.
And she would like to know what the situation is with the bus down at Haywood going across to Mount Gambier. Now, could you believe?
I'm going to knock you out in a minute, Don. Don. God's sake, man, pull yourself together. We're going to come back and speak to Mike on part two of this. Thanks very much to Dr. Peter Larkins, and I'm going to have a good stern talk to you in a minute. Play that, for God's sake, play that.
I'm open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe.